both so much. She stood up, and Caroline and I both hugged her. I will have a baby for you if you're okay with having a hippie L.A. home birth, but I'm not going back in that hospital. I patted Caroline. It's okay. I've got that one. I winked at her. Let's just hope you're the better bone marrow match, so it's fair. Caroline nodded. Deal. Emerson was wiping her eyes and laughing now. Listen, I said. Mark's right. Let's not get worked up about something we don't even know yet, okay? She nodded. Right, Caroline said. And in the meantime, just know that the two of us will do and give you anything you need, and we will make sure you get the best doctor in the world. Emerson nodded again. I know. Good, I said, hugging her again. Chin up, little one. And guys, she said, just please don't let anything slip to Mom. I don't want to worry her. I nodded in agreement, but I didn't feel all that confident. When Mom had found out we had kept this from her, I had a feeling our biggest concern would no longer be who was going to carry Emerson's baby.
16. Life. Ansley. I don't think I've ever been as shocked as I was when my husband Carter came to me and said he thought we should start trying for another baby. Because I saw the way he watched Caroline, the way he studied her. I saw the way he hoped she would develop some feature or mannerism that would indicate she was really his. It had all been a bad dream, what he had asked me to do. I knew he wanted to believe that we had defied what the doctors told us, that we had created this beautiful miracle all on our own. I had also known from that very first rainy night I ventured back to Peachtree Bluff, back to Jack, back to try to get the one thing Carter and I wanted that we couldn't have on our own, that it was a bad idea. Jack and I had loved each other. We had shared so many of our teenaged summers, stealing kisses on the boardwalk, spending lazy days holding hands in the sand, throwing footballs with our friends, sneaking beer at the pier at night. The only thing that had eventually torn us apart was his proclamation that he didn't want children, and my insistence that I would have them. Our life together had been so carefree, so much fun, except when the summers were over and we had to leave each other, of course. But no matter how happy you are in your marriage, and believe me, I was, marriage is real life, and it's real work. There are bills to pay, taxes to figure, laundry to be done, decisions to make. The love is real, but the stress is real, too. While I was deeply happy in my life with Carter, there was no doubt that my mind wandered every now and then to that simpler time. I understand with every ounce of my being that this is why people have affairs. This is how they convince themselves that they are in love with someone else. It's easy to resurrect that forgotten feeling when you have no responsibilities. I knew this, logically. But it had taken me 5 months to get pregnant with Caroline. That was 5 sections of time carved out for Jack and me. 5 stints of 72 hours that weren't only about making this baby. They were about spending time together, reliving the past, and, in some ways, getting a glimpse into what might have been if I had never met Carter that summer before my senior year of college. If, instead, I had spent that summer with Jack. I knew in my heart of hearts that what I had with Carter was a once-in-a-lifetime love. But it had been tainted by the day-to-day of marriage. What I had with Jack hadn't. Even though my head knew this, my heart still felt that dangerous pitter-pat whenever I was in his presence, which is why I realized, after I became pregnant with Caroline, that I couldn't see Jack anymore. So, no, technically I didn't need to fly to Peachtree Bluff to tell Jack that I was pregnant. But for heaven's sake, I owed the man that much, didn't I? He had been the one to create this child with me. Didn't he have a right to know? I was sitting in Jack's living room when he walked in from work. His face lit up. I had promised myself that I wouldn't have any physical contact with him. I was already pregnant. It had to go back to friendship. But I stood when he walked into the room, and he rushed to me, kissing me with that intensity I had come to know so well. "Hi," he said, a smile playing on his lips. "We have to stop meeting like this." I kissed him again. He was so close, so warm. I couldn't help it. "Well," I said, hearing a hint of sadness in my voice, "I think we're going to." He pulled away from me and his face fell. "Oh, right." His posture shifted from confident and happy to distraught. "So that's it then? I've done my duty and now we're over." "Jack," I whispered. He shook his head and ventured a smile. "I'm not angry," he said. "I knew this was the deal. I knew you would get pregnant and you would be gone." I had planned to go back home to New York, tell Carter I was pregnant, and have the celebration to end all celebrations. We were going to have the life we had always dreamed of, strolling through Central Park with our baby, holding hands, walking to preschool, Carter parading his son or daughter around his office. "Maybe we have this one last weekend," I whispered. "Maybe we can pretend we don't know." "Know what?" he asked, winking at me. My head was screaming that this was wrong. But hell, the whole thing had been wrong, hadn't it? Of course it had. I knew that. It's amazing how convoluted your thoughts can become, how a seemingly reasonable mind can convince itself that the worst things are right, that in between the very clearly black and white there might be shades of gray. But even I couldn't convince myself there were shades of gray in what I was doing now. The baby was made. This was cheating on my husband. Yet I couldn't break away from Jack's arms. Not yet. As day turned to night, the light drifting away, slipping from the sky like this love from our fingers, the sadness started to creep in between us. Our banter shifted to serious conversation about what the future could hold. But I never expected Jack to say, "Stay." "What do you mean?" I rolled over on my side, suddenly chilled, covering myself with a sheet, our faces inches from each other. "You know what I mean, Ansley. Leave Carter. Leave New York. Come home. We'll get married and raise our baby together." I shook my head. "You never wanted children, Jack." He shook his head. "I know what I said, but if it's you and me and the baby, I think it could be kind of great." He paused and looked at me again. "Stay, Ansley." Another chill ran through me, a dread that this was not what we had agreed to, a horror that I had made a colossal mistake. But in that, I realized I was thinking about it. And that was what scared me most of all. It took only a few minutes of considering leaving Carter, bringing this baby back to Peachtree Bluff and living with Jack, for me to realize that if I was meant to be with Jack, I would have been. But I wasn't. I was meant to be with Carter. And now, I felt like I was where I was meant to be once again. The girls were home. I was going to decorate Jack's house. I wasn't even nervous about leaving everyone for Mom's doctor's appointment. She had fought me tooth and nail on this for weeks. But after the episode a couple of days ago, that feeling in my gut that this was more than just normal old-age forgetfulness kept nagging me. We were going to a neurologist in Athens late that afternoon, and I wouldn't hear another word about it. "Hey, Mom," I said nonchalantly, walking into her room. She was making her bed. I had hated it when she arrived in Peachtree Bluff in that cast and was so reliant on us. Her independent streak was one of my favorite things about her. And even at 83, she was going strong. That same independent streak was, of course, the thing that had driven this deep, seemingly impenetrable wedge between us. But so many of the things in our lives are a bit of a double-edged sword. The mere thought of her losing her mind was too much for me to take. "Let's go out to lunch," I said. She looked at me suspiciously. "Your three daughters just got home from 6 days at sea, and you want to take me out to lunch?" I shrugged. "Yeah." Then I winked at her. "If I'm gone, I don't have to help with the laundry." I paused. "Plus, we've had practically no quality time together since you got here." She perched herself at the end of her freshly made bed and said, "Speaking of, I wanted to talk to you about that. I'm as good as new, and I think it's time for me to go home." I could feel the shock on my face, though I wasn't sure why. Of course my mom was going to want to go back to Florida, to her friends and her life. But as my brother Scott and I had discussed many times, her age was starting to show, and she needed to be here where I could keep an eye on her. Scott's travel reporting kept him on the road or in the sky all the time. And it wasn't like my brother John even spoke to any of us. This was the only option. Only, none of us had had the nerve to break it to Mom yet. And quite frankly, if I was going to play caregiver for the rest of her days, I didn't feel like it was my responsibility to break that news to her. I gave Mom my most pitiful look. "Couldn't you stay a couple more weeks, until I get Sloan back on her feet? There's so much going on here, and I could really use your help." Mom took the 2 steps to her walker, patted my shoulder, and said, "Sure, sweetheart. Whatever you need." I couldn't believe that worked. I helped Mom into the car and she said, "Why don't we go to one of those divine waterfront restaurants? My treat." 83-year-olds and 3-year-olds are essentially the same. Slow, stubborn, extremely opinionated. But 83-year-olds generally have better table manners, so overall they're better lunch companions. Verbena was our favorite waterfront restaurant, but I hadn't been there in a while. White tablecloths and 2-hour lunches weren't exactly my speed these days. Mom and I both ordered tea service instead of lunch. There was nothing better than those little sandwiches with the crusts removed and tiny brownies, lemon squares, and macarons. "So how long do you think it will be?" Mom asked. I knew without clarification that she meant until we heard about Adam. "I hope soon," I said. "The waiting is the worst part." She nodded. "You know all about that." The waiting when Carter died had nearly killed me, and I was never one of the lucky ones who knew. I never had remains or a DNA sample. I had no wallet, no shoes, nothing. I never had any real closure. Of course, I had known the entire time that he was gone. But there's always that voice in the back of your head that tells you to keep hoping, keep searching, keep believing. Mom smiled at the waitress as she served us. "Thank you." I placed my green tea bag in the white porcelain pot. Mom selected Earl Grey, as usual. She was kind of a tea purist, except when it came to Kyle. If Kyle fixed her anything at all, she would bat her eyelashes at him and tell him it was divine. She took a bite of brownie first. I laughed. What? At my age, I'm not taking any chances. I took a bite of mine, too. Why not? The desserts at Verbena were decadent, rich, delicious, award-winning. But I would rather have had a Hershey's bar if I'm honest about the whole thing. My mother and I always had a deep bond, which is why it had shocked me that she wouldn't let the girls and me come home when I discovered Carter had left me not penniless but in a cataclysmic hole of debt. I had tried so hard to move past it. But I think this period in my life now only served to intensify the wound because I knew for certain I would never leave my girls out in the cold when they needed me most. In the quiet, in the dark, in my most private thoughts, the ones I would never say out loud to anyone, I resented the fact that, although she hadn't lifted a finger to help me when my life exploded, I would be the one taking my mother to doctor's appointments, feeding her dinner, bathing her, taking care of her every need until the day she died. But, mostly, I felt lucky I could do it. We'd never been best friends like some of my girlfriends had been with their mothers, and I was okay with that. I only hoped that maybe during this time in our lives, we could repair what was broken between us. Darling, she said, taking a tiny sip of her tea. I meant what I said the other day. Why do you push that divine man away? He's totally in love with you. I'm totally in love with you, but even still, I recognize you are not perfect. He, on the other hand, does not. I laughed. Mom had always loved him. When I first started dating Carter, she kept asking what had ever happened to that darling Jack. Mom, I said, Carter was the one. If Jack had been the one, I would have married him, but he wasn't. I did love Carter, but you didn't marry Jack because he didn't want children. I assume you don't want any more? She raised her eyebrows. We both laughed. I wiped my mouth and took a sip of cool water. It's not that simple, Mom. I loved him all those years ago, but we're different people now. She looked at me like I was dense. That's why you give the man a chance. That's why you try to get to know each other now. She made it sound so simple, but perhaps that's because she didn't understand the entire picture. When Jack came back to Peachtree Bluff, I was panicked that the girls would find out our secret, would find out that Jack was Caroline and Sloane's father. Now, I knew Jack would never let that happen. But even still, how could I lie to my children like that? How could I be with Jack without telling them the truth? I wasn't sure I could. But that was all beside the point. Today my mission was to get this woman to the doctor. I decided to level with her. Mom, I said, taking a bite of egg salad for courage, I'm taking you to the doctor today. She waved her hand. Darling, my ankle is fine. Not for your ankle, I said. This was when it was going to get dicey. For your brain. I expected her to freak out, but she barely reacted. Still as a cat stalking its prey. That's when I began to worry. She took a sip of tea and cleared her throat. There's no need. I cut her off. I know you're going to say you're fine, but you're not fine, Mom. There's something going on, and if we can catch it early, maybe get some treatment, it won't progress. She took a deep breath and reached for my hand across the table. I knew that she was going to argue with me, so I said, Mom, you were out of your mind when Jack was there the other night. You didn't recognize anything, didn't know who he was. Darling, she said calmly. And that's when I knew something was wrong, something big. I knew that whatever she said next was going to change my life in ways I wasn't ready for. I don't know how to tell you this, really, she said. She paused and looked into my eyes as if she were memorizing them. But you're right. I'm not fine. She put her hands back in her lap, smoothing her napkin slowly. She took another sip of tea, cleared her throat, and looked up at me. I have cancer, darling. I've had it for quite some time. It's in my brain. I felt numb, frozen in my chair. She was so calm, so steady. I wanted to cry, but instead I sprang into action. We have to get you to a specialist. Are they going to operate? Do chemo? Radiation? She put her hand up to stop me, and I knew we were about to have the biggest fight of our lives. We are not going to do any of that. I'm going to live out my days as I please. I will eat my dessert first and watch Mickey Mouse with my great-grandchildren, and when my time is through, it will be through. She was so stoic when she said it. I usually thought of this decision, of this state of mind in the face of death, as resigned, but Mom wasn't resigned. She was almost joyous. And it hit me. My mother was dying. My mother was going to die, soon. I felt tears well up and dabbed them away with my napkin. Sweetheart, let's not make a scene, okay? I'm fine. I'm better than fine. I'm not losing my hair and vomiting. I'm not spending a year in the hospital to potentially buy me two more when I'll never really be right. I've thought about this. I assure you, this is the right decision.
For whom, Mother? Because it doesn't feel like the right decision for me.
She smiled at me sadly. I will not have you spending your life caring for me and shuffling me back and forth to doctor's appointments. I'm ready to be with your father anyhow. It wasn't until she said, "You all are terribly boring," that I finally saw emotion breaking through her placid expression.
You will not go back to Florida. That's it, and that's final.
She opened her mouth to argue, but I think she knew I needed this, in the way that mothers always do. She took a sip of tea and said,
I do so love that beautiful Emerson with that darling Mark. Wouldn't it be wonderful if she married him, moved back to Peachtree, and gave up all that acting nonsense?
Just like that, we were finished talking about dying. We were, instead, talking about life. While I wasn't sure I agreed with her decision to forego treatment, I did know one thing for sure. In the entire time I had known her, all my life, except for once, I had never known her to make the wrong decision. And that thought would carry me through until the very end.
17. War Zone. Sloan. January 20th, 2016.
Dear Sloan, I lost one of my men today. His world is over. I'm still here. How can that be? All there's left to do is keep fighting. All I can do is make sure he didn't die in vain. I love you, Adam.
6 months into our marriage, Adam and I had slowed the fast, crazy pace of our relationship and begun getting into a routine. He was home, so I wasn't worried. I was painting and working at a gift shop near our post. We would cook dinner together at night. It was a simple life, the kind of life I'd never known I'd wanted, but now that I had it, felt absolutely perfect. Perfect, that is, until the night we were lying in bed and I was drifting off when Adam said,
"When do you want to start trying to have a baby?"
I jolted up. "A baby?" I asked, panic surging through me. "No one ever said anything about a baby." It was true, no one had. In all those months of talking and writing letters, Adam and I had never talked about having children. Obviously, this was not a good idea. Having kids is one of the most life-altering things that can happen in a family, and I knew we should have talked about it a million times. It was always on the tip of my tongue, especially because I knew I seemed like someone who wanted that traditional life, that role as mother and caregiver. Only, I didn't. Being with Adam had, ironically, soothed that fear that had embedded itself into me like a tick in flesh after my father died. Whereas before, I felt terrified of getting too close to anyone, scared of loving or letting anyone in, paralyzed by the mere thought that I might receive another phone call that someone I had loved more than life was gone in an instant. Now, with Adam, I felt safer. It was strange, since he had a job where he could be taken from me at any moment. But I knew that. In his line of work, people died. People were killed. It's not that I expected he would be killed in the line of duty by any stretch of the imagination, but it was always a possibility. It was always something that was in the back of my mind. Well, I realize this doesn't sound totally rational. Tragedy will do that to a mind, I think. I liked that the element of surprise was gone. If Adam were to be killed, it would rip my heart out of my body. It would break me in ways I couldn't even imagine. But it wouldn't be a total shock. And so in that way I felt prepared. But I wasn't prepared for this. "We've only been married 6 months," I said. The reality was not that I didn't want to have kids because Adam and I hadn't been married long enough. I knew without hesitation that Adam and I would be together, happily, in love, until our dying breaths. The reality was that I didn't want to have kids at all. And if I was honest with myself, I'd never brought it up before because I was selfish. I'd never brought it up because I knew it might be a deal-breaker for Adam, and I wanted him more than I wanted anything else on the planet. If I was with Adam, everything else would work out. Or so I thought. He laughed and kissed me on the cheek. "I know, babe," he said. "But I'll be deployed again soon. And wouldn't it be great to be pregnant before I go?" I looked into his earnest face. He was so happy, so enthusiastic, so charming. Who wouldn't want to pass along those genes? Well, I mean, I wouldn't. I could never handle the level of fear and anxiety that would hide out inside me every minute if I had children out there walking around. Were they safe? Were they sick? Would they get cancer, break their leg, get an infection that went into their bloodstream? Would they get hit by a car crossing the street? I could play what if all day, all night, every night, and I didn't even have them yet. There was no way. But Adam was so happy and he looked so expectant. I wanted to please him. I wanted to make him smile. But I didn't want children. I should have told him. I considered telling him. But I couldn't bear to send him away into a war zone with this huge burden weighing on him. I couldn't send him away distracted. I needed him focused on his security, his safety. I needed to give him a reason to come back home. I could have suggested we wait until then. But I looked into his eyes, and I remembered what he had given me, what he had sacrificed for me. I couldn't bear to break his heart. So I said, "That sounds great, honey." Adam didn't know I had an IUD. And what he didn't know wouldn't hurt him.
18. Well-Behaved Women, Ansley. Mom called the boys to tell them about her cancer. Scott was reporting on a crisis in Venezuela, and despite the major flooding there, he promised he would be on the first flight back to the U.S. John was at work just an hour and a half away. He didn't promise to come, didn't even mention it, in fact. Carter was a terrific judge of character, and it used to bother me that he didn't like John. He never said as much, of course, but I could tell. He was usually so warm and open, but around John he closed up. I'm not saying John is a bad person, necessarily, but I see now that Carter's assessment of my brother was correct. John and I have been distant for a long time. I always believed we would evolve past that. But when Grandmother left me the Peachtree Bluff house, I realized John and I would never have what Scott and I had, because at our core, we are fundamentally different people. Who would abandon his own sister and practically never speak to her again over a house? All of that came rushing back to me when I got a text from him that morning. Let me know when Mom gets really bad off so I can come. I texted back, "She's dying of cancer, John. I'd say time is of the essence." I could feel the chill through the phone. His lack of response didn't surprise me, but it would have been nice to be able to tell my mother that her son was coming. Just like that, she appeared in her robe fresh from a shower. I was sitting at the dining room table sipping my first cup of coffee of the morning and sketching a room. Something I hadn't done in quite some time. Over the past several years, I had created mood boards for my clients so they could see exactly what furniture, fixtures, and fabric I was contemplating for their rooms. But I knew already that Jack would let me have free rein. And sketching the rooms I was designing was how I best dreamed them. I liked to think I was drawing them into life. Plus, the sketches were beautiful and would make a terrific thanks-for-letting-me-decorate-your-house gift. Mom's cane was tapping rhythmically on the floor as she walked into the kitchen. "Don't you need to get to your store, darling?" I needed to go to my store very, very much, but I had seemed unable to pry myself away from my mother's side since she told me the news. The store would still be there when she was gone. "I can work on these sketches right here," I said, standing up. "Let me get you breakfast. I made bacon and eggs for the kids, so I kept some warm for you." She touched my hand gently. "Please let me do it while I'm still able." I didn't want to let her. I wanted to take care of her, to make this go away. To have her for years and years more. But that wasn't the hand we had been dealt. "I'd like to go with you to the store after breakfast," she said. "Are you feeling up to that?" She glared at me. "Note to self, don't ask Mom if she's feeling up to it." "Great," I said. "I'd love that. I know Leah would love it too. You can be our design assistant today." She shook her head. "You design. I'll wait on customers. I've always wanted to run a cash register." I doubted she realized the cash register was now an iPad with a square reader attached. But there was still that drawer that popped open and made the satisfying ding. "What else, Mom?"
"What else what?" she called from the other side of the wall. "What else have you always wanted to do?"
She peeked her head around the doorway.
"Oh, let's not do that. I don't want to be one of those dying women."
I laughed.
"You won't, but if there are things you want to do, let's do them. Why not? We have time."
She smiled at me and disappeared again.
"I have traveled the world," she called. "I have no desire to jump out of any airplanes. But I would like to ring a cash register."
I couldn't imagine a dying woman's request being any simpler than that. I heard the clang of the plates through the wall and could picture my mother serving eggs and bacon for what could be one of the last times. How many times had she made bacon and eggs for me? How many times had I watched her, always perfectly dressed, scrambling eggs and avoiding grease pops from the bacon? And now she was going to be gone. I wiped my eyes just as she reappeared. "I'm going up to get dressed, and then I'll drive you down to the store." She crunched her bacon and said, "Ansley, my abilities have not completely deteriorated since I told you about the cancer yesterday. I am perfectly able to walk one block to your store." 20 minutes later, Mom was perched on a bar stool behind the counter of my store. Leah was teaching her how to use our point-of-sale system. And, despite my excitement over designing a pair of custom chaise lounges for Jack's house, I could feel my eyelids starting to get heavy. As if he sensed my exhaustion from several blocks away, Coffee Kyle appeared. "Oh," I said, practically running to meet him, "bless you." He laughed. "And to think my parents wanted me to be a doctor, lawyer, or missionary. There's no way those things could have been as satisfying as this." He handed me a cup, and I said, "Trust me, you'll save far more innocent lives doing what you do now." Kyle smiled. "Now, before you take a sip, you should know you three ladies are my guinea pigs. I'm trying to switch some of my regulars onto drinks with less sugar." He looked at me pointedly and said, "Prevent cancer, all of that." How did he know? I hadn't told anyone except Sandra and Emily. But this was Peachtree Bluff. No one could keep a secret around here. Well, no one except for Jack and me. "I want the sugar," Mom said. "If I'm going down, I'd like to go down with a mocha frappuccino in one hand and a Hershey's bar in the other." We all laughed. "Just hear me out," Kyle said. "This is my new latte, made with unsweetened cashew milk, raw cocoa powder, cinnamon, a dash of chocolate stevia, and a touch of matcha tea and maca powder for added health benefits." I was going to hate it. I knew it. Leah, Mom, and I took simultaneous sips. I was expecting a flat, thin latte with practically no flavor and that disgusting stevia aftertaste. But what I got was a cup of heaven. "This is my new usual," I said. "Kyle, you are a genius." Mom nodded. "Yeah, I'll go down with this in one hand instead." "It's so creamy," Leah said. I loved the authoritative air Kyle took on when talking about coffee, as if he were discussing a new species he had discovered in the Amazon. "I've been experimenting with homemade nut milks for a while now, and I've discovered that cashew takes on the perfect density for lattes. Macadamia does as well, but the flavor combination isn't as good." "Oh," Leah exclaimed, "white chocolate macadamia." Kyle laughed. "It's in the works." Mom took another sip and said, "You know who would love this?" "Oh, Emerson," I chimed in. Kyle cleared his throat the way he tended to do when he was nervous, and I could have sworn his ears reddened the tiniest bit. Oh my gosh, he had made this for Emerson.
"I'll have to get her to taste it when she gets back." "When will the girls be back?" he asked with forced nonchalance.
"Oh, they're back,"
he grinned.
"Then I'll take her one right away."
I felt bad for him, but maybe it was all in my head, and I just assumed every man was interested in my daughters. But maybe that wasn't the case with Kyle. In fact, when I said, "She's probably at Mark's," he didn't even flinch.
"Okay," Mom said exuberantly. "Kyle, you need to buy something. I'll ring you up."
"Mom," I scolded. I turned to Kyle. You don't need to buy anything.
Grammy, is this your first sale?
Kyle's hair seemed even blacker today, his arms more toned, his jawline more defined. I wasn't sure it was possible for him to get more handsome, but it seemed he had.
It certainly will be, darling. I've always wanted to work the cash register.
She scrunched her nose. Well, not this newfangled contraption, but I suppose it will have to do.
Kyle shook his head. The cash register in my coffee shop is from 1962. I'd be honored if you would help me out over there for a bit.
She gasped and put her hand to her mouth.
Well, if you don't know how to make a lady's dying wish come true, then I don't know who does.
Mom, I scolded again, the girls don't even know yet.
My lips are sealed, Kyle said. I looked at my mother. We have to tell them today.
Mom waved her hand. Fine, fine. You're such a bore sometimes, Ainsley.
Such a bore. I guess I was. But there wasn't much that was exciting about dying.
Kyle carefully hoisted Mom off the stool and winked at me.
I promise I'll take good care of her, he said. I'll bring her back before lunch.
Mom, I said, feeling as if I were sending one of my girls off to school again. Behave. She turned and put her hand on her heart as though she were offended.
Why, don't I always, darling?
I shook my head. No, no, you never do, which is why I have to say it.
Well-behaved women rarely make history, Kyle whispered.
And then they were on their way. Mom's arm wrapped around Kyle's, her other hand on her cane. For the briefest of moments, I just knew the doctors were wrong. There wasn't one thing wrong with my mother. There couldn't be. And while Kyle had always been the adorable boy who brought me my coffee, this was one of those times when I couldn't help but see him as something more.
19. Mother's Morning Out. Sloan. The boat trip with my sisters had done me a world of good. Coming home made me realize what a world of good Vivi did me. I had taken for granted over the past few months how much my sweet niece played with Taylor and AJ. Now this afternoon, sitting in my bedroom that seemed to be getting smaller by the minute, I realized I needed to get out of there. Me, the girl who didn't even want her children to go to school because she was so terrified something would happen to them and it would be all her fault, felt like she needed a break. AJ was sitting on the floor arranging coins from biggest to smallest, and Taylor, whom I was trying to read to, was knocking over each of AJ's stacks as soon as he finished them. AJ had made a particularly tall tower with probably 15 coins. I was very proud of his motor skills. I thought Taylor was completely engrossed in a Shel Silverstein poem until he wriggled in my lap, kicked out his leg, and the stack was gone. Mommy! AJ wailed. Taylor, that's enough, I said a little too forcefully. I've had it. I've told you 5 times not to do that, and now you're going to your room.
No!
Taylor screamed, flailing on the floor. I grabbed him by one arm and one leg. I'd learned from experience that during a full-on tantrum, I couldn't hold him the regular way. One arm and one leg made him madder, but it gave me a safe grip with which to remove him from the situation. I walked into his room and set him on the bed as gently as I could, and said, as if a mid-tantrum kid could even hear you, "You stay here until I tell you to come out." I closed the door behind me, and the screaming continued. He'd calm down, eventually. AJ was still stacking when I got back to my room.
"Look, Mommy," he said proudly.
He had completed his task once again. "Good job, bud," I said. "Now I want you to make a pile of change for me that equals $1.
He nodded. 100 cents is $1. Exactly, I said. I wanted at least one member of the family to be good with money. I smiled, thinking again of that zero balance, and smiled even bigger when I realized that since my debt had been cleared, despite my stress levels with Adam, Emerson's illness, and the kids, I hadn't bought one single thing. Not so much as a juice box, which Mom was handling right now. It would be a good chance for me to build up our savings. Caroline walked into my bedroom, Grammy on her heels. "Well, hello there," I said. "Did the screaming bring you up?" "Something like that," Grammy said, looking around at the floor. The room was fairly neat, but AJ's school things were spread everywhere. I thought again how much easier it would get when Taylor was 3 or 4 and could do work at the same time as AJ. I sensed an ambush coming, but I wasn't sure what sort of ambush it would be. "So," Caroline started, "I have the best idea." "No," I said. Caroline crossed her arms, looking hurt. "Not no," she said. "You don't even know what I'm going to say." "Right," I said. "But I can already tell I don't like it." Grammy laughed. I ran my hand through AJ's hair while Grammy said, "Wow, AJ, I'm going to bring my change up here and let you sort it." He lit up. "Okay, that would be so cool, wouldn't it, Mommy?" I nodded and grinned at him. "Hurry up," I said to Caroline. "I need to get Taylor out of time out. I was just thinking that our poor mother has hardly been able to work for months, and the last month wasn't able to work at all." I wasn't sure what she was getting at. "I thought it would be nice," Caroline continued, "if we helped her at the store so she could get caught up on all her design projects." I still didn't say anything, but eyed her warily. She continued, "I could run the store. You could paint a little." She paused. "I thought we could market these cool live paint sessions with you, and it would really help sell your art." "What a waste of your breath," I said, getting up off the floor. "What do you mean?" Caroline asked. I walked toward the boys' room and said, "I mean, I said no to begin with. That's still my answer, and everything in between was just a waste of breath." Caroline leaned against the door jamb, arms crossed as I knelt down in front of a now calm Taylor. "Taylor, you were in time out for not listening to Mommy. When Mommy speaks, we listen, and we always do what Mommy says right away." The new discipline book I was reading said this was more effective for kids under the age of 3 than trying to explain why the exact behavior was wrong, i.e. pushing over AJ's coin stack. "Do you have anything to say to Mommy?" Taylor nodded, his little lip stuck out. "Sorry, Mommy." He hugged me and I said, "Thank you, Taylor. You may go play now." I was so relieved. Some days this routine took an hour because the child absolutely refused to apologize and we'd have to keep repeating the cycle. It was exhausting, but it was working. When I got up, Grammy was standing behind me. "Darling," she said gently, "I know you've been having some money troubles, and it's time for you to stand on your own 2 feet. You need to be able to support yourself in case..." She trailed off, and I could feel the anger welling up inside me. "In case what, Grammy?" I paused. "There's no in case. Adam is coming home. Adam supports our family. That's it, and that's final. I don't want to hear about it again." "No," Grammy said, putting her hands on her hips. "I'm going to say this. I love you, Sloane. You're a beautiful, talented, artistic, bright light. It has bothered me for years that once you married Adam, you became this..." She paused, searching for the words, then finished,
this Stepford wife. I gasped, and Caroline scolded. Grammy! The anger was rising in my chest. How could you say anything negative about Adam at a time like this? Darling, Grammy said, I'm not saying anything negative about Adam. Adam is perfect. It's you who's the problem. I wanted to protest again as tears of humiliation sprung to my eyes. I wanted to fight her on this, but I knew she wasn't wrong. I had lost myself, and I needed to do something for me before it was too late. All the same, I was indignant as I walked back to my bedroom. Who was she to even consider that Adam wouldn't come home? Of course he would. It was preposterous to consider any other scenario. Still, it would be nice to get out of the house a little bit more. And going back to work would get me to my savings goal much faster. I turned so quickly, Caroline almost bumped right into me. I will help Mom at the store, but I will not paint in public. I was really enjoying painting, loving it, actually, but it wasn't time. Caroline put her hands up. Fine, she said. That's my girl, Grammy said. Caroline squealed. I've already signed the boys up for Mother's morning out. I looked down at my precious little babies on the floor, the babies who had never been cared for by anyone outside of their family, except for a couple of moms on post who, let's face it, were my family too. How could I possibly leave them? Then AJ picked up one of my hair ties and flicked it at Taylor. Taylor started crying. I looked at Caroline. When do I start?
20. Georgia girl. Ansley. It was hard to believe that only a couple of months earlier, Jack and I had been planning to take his recently renovated boat out on its maiden voyage, together. I had been hesitant when he came back to Peachtree Bluff. Maybe hesitant was putting it mildly. More like terrified. I didn't know what he wanted. But I did know he was the one person who had the power to ruin everything I had built with my children and devastate my relationships with them forever. Sure, Caroline and Sloan knew they came from a sperm donor. They knew Emerson was a miracle child, the only one who was biologically Carter's. But they didn't know their mother nearly died from a rare infection from her first intrauterine insemination. And that from then on out, Carter wouldn't hear of fertility treatments of any kind. Knowing they came from an anonymous sperm donor is quite different from knowing their father is actually the man who lives beside them, their mother's first love. Or that he got her pregnant the regular way, not via a syringe. That was a lot of things not to know. A few of those things, namely that Jack was their biological father, I really wanted them to know, but in my time, in my way. That was why I reminded myself for the millionth time, I could not be with Jack. I had been standing at his front door, holding my sketchbook for 10 minutes, trying to gear myself up to go in. Biscuit was getting impatient at my feet. Her little tail thumping on the wood of the front porch. She whined up at me. I know, I said, but it's complicated. You're a dog. You wouldn't understand. Just then the door flew open. I screamed, Biscuit barked, and I expected to hear Jack's gasp. But that wasn't what I heard at all. Instead, there was a second scream. One of the busty blonde variety named after the state in which we currently resided. She was wearing a cocktail dress. People do not wear cocktail dresses at 9 a.m. unless they are, as my girls would say, doing the walk of shame. Oh, hi, Ansley, she said,
grinning at me like she'd been caught with her hand in the cookie jar. My cookie jar. I was having trouble regulating my breath. I was trying to smile and make my face look normal. Did my face look normal? I looked down at Biscuit, who was looking up at me. She started barking in George's direction, which is how I knew once and for all that my face did not, in fact, look normal. Georgia had her clutch in one hand and a wrap in the other. I knew I should say something, but I didn't know what.
I had a flat tire, she said quickly.
How convenient, I said under my breath.
What?
Her hair was mussed in the back. Definitely sex hair. I could hear Jack's footsteps coming down the hall, and I turned to leave. I couldn't possibly face him, not now. I should have been sad or heartbroken, but really I was just mad. So, no, we couldn't be together. I couldn't have him. But I didn't want her to have him either. It was a mature reaction. Unfortunately, as I turned to walk down the porch steps, so did Georgia.
Jack and I went to the most splendid benefit last night, and then we got home, and I had a flat tire, and he was in no position to drive, so...
We have got to get Uber here, I said, an edge to my voice.
She laughed delightedly and winked at me. Oh, I hope we don't.
Ansley? I heard Jack call from the porch as if there were any question about who I was.
I wanted to pretend that I didn't hear him, but I couldn't. I was 20 feet in front of him. I turned and held up my sketchbook. I'll come back later, I said, relieved to see he was at least dressed, when you're not so busy.
Now is good, he said. Come on in.
I can't wait to see what you do to the place, Ansley.
Georgia called. Maybe it was only in my mind, but the way she said it made me feel like she wanted me to get it all spruced up so she could move right in. I would die. I would die if he were living beside me with another woman, and then my children would have yet another tragedy to deal with. A vision of them sobbing in black at my funeral crossed my mind. No, I couldn't die. I didn't have time. The last thing I wanted was to walk through that front door, but I had to. You're upset, Jack said. How perceptive.
No, I said, not upset.
Of course I was upset. How could I not be upset? I loved him, for heaven's sake. He named his boat after me, and now he was having sleepovers with realtors from Atlanta named Georgia. But I had no right to be upset. I had told him it wasn't time for us to be together, that I had to focus on my girls. And all of that was true. When you loved someone, weren't you supposed to want good things for them? I took a deep breath, swallowed my pride, and said, "You deserve to be happy." A flicker of emotion passed across his face. Certainly not his usual amusement. Something more like defeat, but maybe I was reading too much into it. Okay, he said. I handed him my sketchbook.
Please be careful with it, I said. You can look these over. I'll come get it later.
He tossed the book onto the ratty sofa, sitting on the green carpet in the dimly lit room. This place was awful. But it wasn't going to be. It was going to be pure luxury. For Jack. And Georgia.
That's exactly what I meant when I said to be careful.
Jack rolled his eyes. I felt like we were working up to some sort of fight. But there was nothing to fight about. Nothing to fight for. We were over and I just needed to go.
I'll come get these in a few days, I said.
Ansley, come on, he said. I stopped, my hand on the doorknob, and turned. I know you're not okay, he said. You don't have to pretend. I get it. We can't be together, but that doesn't mean you have to be okay that I'm with someone else. I would hate that. Roles reversed.
I got that same feeling I get when I haven't eaten in too long and the room went wobbly. So he was with her. I knew what it looked like. And I knew that, flat tire or no, if you wanted to get home, you could figure out a way to get home. But a part of me was hoping it wasn't what it seemed. Maybe she had slept